Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Monday, October 16, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Fears of a regional escalation mount in the Israel-Hamas conflict.
If Hezbollah, which is a proxy of Iran, launches a massive attack on Israel, I will consider that a threat to the state of Israel, existential in nature. I will introduce a resolution in the United States Senate to allow military action.
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Blinken says Palestinian civilians should not suffer because of Hamas. Angola's president is expected to address parliament today, Monday. Vote counting in Liberia's October 10 elections continue as police arrest several people for tampering with ballot boxes in Nimba County.
Everything that is under control, the counting process is ongoing. Because the box that was taken away, it was the box for the representative candidates, not the presidential candidates.
And today, Monday, is World Food Day. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United States has renewed calls to ensure that innocent civilians fleeing the Israel-Hamas war are protected and have their basic needs met. Separately, concerns about a wider regional conflict have led a U.S. senator to issue a strong warning against Iran and the Lebanon-based militia known as Hezbollah. VOA's Veronica Baldera Iglesias explains.
The Israel Defense Forces have underscored their determination to destroy Hamas in its entirety following the militant group's deadly incursion into Israel on October 7. They also renewed calls for Palestinian civilians to evacuate the northern part of Gaza before strikes by Israel intensify. The IDF's spokesperson, Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, was interviewed on ABC.
We are seeing that people are actually evacuating. Indeed, we would like to see the humanitarian organizations assisting in the evacuation of people for the welfare of people and not side with Hamas, telling them not to evacuate.
With more than 1 million Palestinian civilians potentially trying to move out of harm's way, the United States is working with its partners to ensure the humanitarian needs of the displaced are being met, said White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on ABC's This Week.
We are in touch with our Israeli counterparts. We're in touch with the United Nations to help secure the necessary supplies of food, water, and medicine to the citizens of Gaza, those Palestinians who have nothing to do with the barbaric terrorists who carried out this attack.
The exchange of fire continued over the weekend at the Israeli border with Lebanon, where the Iran-backed militia Hezbollah operates. Republican Lindsey Graham, who plans to visit the region in the coming days with a bipartisan group of U.S. senators, issued a strong warning against Tehran and its allies, intending to play a more active role in the conflict.
If Hezbollah, which is a proxy of Iran, launches a massive attack on Israel, I will consider that a threat to the state of Israel, existential in nature. I will introduce a resolution in the United States Senate to allow military action by the United States in conjunction with Israel to knock Iran out of the oil business. Iran, if you escalate this war, we're coming for you.
Meanwhile, as part of a regional tour aimed at diffusing tensions, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met Sunday with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. They both agreed on the importance of ensuring assistance to the Palestinian civilians fleeing the war, according to spokesperson Matthew Miller. Blinken is expected to travel again to Israel on Monday for further consultations. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says Palestinian civilians should not suffer because of Hamas. He says this means that they should have, among other things, food, water, medicine, and other essentials. At the same time, Secretary Blinken told reporters Sunday at an airbase in Egypt that Israel has the right to defend itself.
We are here at what is an extremely difficult and very tenuous time for the region in the wake of the slaughter perpetrated by Hamas. We came here with four key objectives: to make clear that the United States stands with Israel, to prevent the conflict from spreading to other places, to work on securing the release of hostages, including American citizens, and to address the humanitarian crisis that exists in Gaza. We started, as you know, in Israel. And it was important to make it very clear that the United States has Israel's back. We will stand with it today, tomorrow, and every day. And we're doing that in word and also in deed. I spent time with Prime Minister Netanyahu to go through the needs that Israel may have to make sure it can effectively defend itself. And you've already seen a lot of that assistance moving forward. And that's a conversation that'll continue. Israel has the right, indeed it has the obligation, to defend itself against these attacks from Hamas and to try to do what it can to make sure that this never happens again. As I said in Tel Aviv, as President Biden has said, the way that Israel does this matters. Needs to do it in a way that affirms the shared values that we have for human life and human dignity, taking every possible precaution to avoid harming civilians. After we left Israel, we've gone now to, I think I've lost track, but to six countries in the region. Jordan, Bahrain, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, now here in Egypt. And the purpose of seeing all of our partners was first and foremost to listen to them, to hear how they're seeing this crisis, and to look at what we can do together to deal with many of the concerns that it's raised. What I've heard from virtually every partner was a determination, a shared view that we have to do everything possible to make sure this doesn't spread to other places. A shared view to safeguard innocent lives. A shared view to get assistance to Palestinians in Gaza who need it. We're working very much on that.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken addressing reporters Sunday at an airbase in Egypt. Heightened tensions and the increasingly hostile presence of armed groups in northern Mali are likely to impede the departure of the U.N. Stabilization Mission there, also known as MINUSMA, the U.N. said in a note to correspondents issued on Saturday. The peacekeeping mission, which for many years has been the deadliest place to serve as a UN blue helmet, is due to draw down fully by December 31st, in accordance with a Security Council mandate. At that point, MINUSMA's 12 campus and one temporary operating base will be closed and handed over to the transitional authorities in Mali. Since it was established 10 years ago, over 300 peacekeepers have lost their lives amid continuing extremist violence and rampant insecurity across much of northern and central Mali. Kenya Defense Forces, also known as KDF troops, serving with the African Union Transition Mission in Somalia at MACE on Saturday held events to mark the KDF Day in honor of the valor and gallantry of the Kenyan soldiers on the front line. Observed every year since 2012, KDF Day is the commemoration of the day Kenya launched Operation Linda Nchi, military offensive in Jubaland, Somalia, on October 14, 2011, in pursuit of al-Shabaab insurgents who had constantly carried out deadly attacks on Kenyan soil. The day is also used to pay tribute to the fallen Kenyan troops who courageously paid the ultimate price in the battlefield while defending the country. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, October 16. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Liberian police say they have arrested eight people for tampering with ballot boxes in the vote-rich northwestern county of Nimba, home of long-term Senator Prince Johnson and the vice presidential candidate of the main opposition Unity Party. Meanwhile, the latest provisional results released over the weekend show President George Weah with a slim lead over main challenger Joseph Boakai. Inspector General of Police Colonel Patrick Sudu tells me the missing ballot boxes were for the legislative vote, not the presidential ballot.
The situation in Nimba County happens when some thugs went out the county center and forcibly entered and took away a ballot box. It's somewhere in District 4, very, very far from San Ygorde. So we sent a reinforcement there, and they were able to arrest 8 persons. And the issue has been reported to NEC.
So these 8 persons, are they affiliated with any political party?
I don't know which party, but I know they're affiliated with Representative Kennedy. I don't know from which party. Because we are not investigating these folks on party basis. We are investigating them for breaking the law.
Something like what happened in Nimba, did it happen anywhere else according to your recollection?
No. It's one of those isolated cases that happened in Nimba County. And the folks took advantage of the proximity of the area because where we are talking about, it takes you hours to get there by motor vehicle. It's a distant area. It's not even too far from the border. It's very, very far. So they used that, looking at the strength of the officers that were there. They forcibly entered and took the ballot by running away. But when our officers were very smart, they started to record whatsoever. So when the reinforcement got there, were easily called to make some arrest.
You said the area is closer to the border. You mean the border with Ivory Coast?
Yeah. The place is not far. It's District 4. It's not far from the border area. But however, everything that is under control, the county process is ongoing. Because what we're doing on the next announcement, the National Election Commission, they said the box that was taken away, it was the box for the representative candidates, not the presidential candidates. So the presidential candidates' boxes are intact.
So, Inspector General, how would you describe your election security readiness?
Well, we are up to the task. I think the election went on Tuesday, the 10th of October. It was very peaceful. We are still ready for the electoral warehouses, the county center, and all of the commissioners. So, I mean, the Labrador National Police is doing well, and we are making sure to maintain the peace.
Inspector General, thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
You are welcome, sir.
Country Patrick Sudu is the Inspector General of the Liberian National Police. He was speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. As partial results from Liberia's October 10 elections continue to trickle in, Senator Prince Johnson, who is running for the 3rd 9-year term, says peace in Liberia rests on the management of the election results. Johnson backed George Weah in 2017 elections, but this year, he is supporting former Vice President Joseph Boakai, the presidential candidate for main opposition Unity Party. Johnson called VOA over the weekend to say he is distressed by an election-related incident that he said took place in the northwestern Nimba County, capital of Sanikwele. Johnson tells me that this is where what he calls thugs from the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, came to disrupt the vote-counting process.
After the elections, a few days ago, the results, the ballot boxes were hauled to Sanikwele NET official office. Unfortunately, one regional man, who is a former county inspector, and one Gompo Kago, who served as representative, but is expected to be put out to the vote, and one Gavison Yelu, who was appointed by Mr. Weah as the Good Governance Commission chairperson, and National Deputy Chair for the campaign. They went this morning with torch to the NET office and threatened everyone there to beat them up and to destroy the ballots. With the intervention of us all informing the police, they were able to run away. This evening, they are all back again. They brought torch, they gave them king juice to drink, and other hard liquor and other substances, and they are ready to disturb them. So we called the Justice Minister and called the police IG. Of course, this morning, there was no protection. The state police there got no arms. The boss who came to disturb, to overpower the police. So currently, the NET workers have closed the NET office. They have stopped the counting because their lives are in danger.
Did you say you called the police, and what did the police do?
We called the police this morning. The police IG, he promised to send people. Though they already have 6 police assigned there before now, but they have no tear gas, no pepper spray, or arms. So those people who power them, and they were right next to me, and they couldn't do anything. And this evening, they came back in huge numbers.
What is the policy? I mean, and did you also inform the Elections Commission?
The Election Commission workers, I guess, have informed the headquarters. And I'm sure the police were also informed. But they said that the police already being assigned there, there was no need to send additional. But with a serious matter unveiling right now, the police actually have promised to send more police with senior officers to make sure that area is guarded. Because I told them, the peace or pieces of this country depend on the result. If Mr. Weah wins fairly, I will salute him. The people of Liberia will hear him. But to destroy the Tabulation Center, the net office, completely lose him. If they destroy the vote, it will not be in the interest of peace. That's not good for him. So they promised to send more police. The Minister of Justice also was contacted this evening. He promised to deal with the issue, but it's good for the world to know and Liberia to know. That's what I call you.
And tell me, Senator, how do you think you are doing with the results that have been announced so far?
Well, you know, for me, the people of Nimba overwhelmingly voted. It's not strange to me. You know, they love me so dearly, and they know in the past we lay our life down for them. They will never forget. Even when God invites us to glory, they will put flowers to my grave on my grave. And so they love me. I'm going to win with the highest for the one that I've been announced so far. I'm in the lead, and no one is equal to where I am right now.
That was Senator Prince Johnson of Liberia speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Angolan President João Lourenço is expected to deliver his State of the Nation speech today, Monday, during the opening of the National Assembly. This after the country's main opposition, UNITA, party walked out of a special parliamentary session on Saturday, called to discuss a possible impeachment of President Lourenço. Independent Angolan journalist Mario Paivai tells me that UNITA and the ruling MPLA disagreed over whether the voting should have been done by secret ballot or public ballot.
As everybody are aware, UNITA introduces an official demand of the impeachment of President João Lourenço. And the National Assembly President calls for an extraordinary and urgent plenary meeting Saturday to discuss this process. And according to the proceedings of the National Assembly, set up eventual commissions to discuss the process. But it was a noisy session. First, because according to UNITA, the National Assembly Presidency do not distribute the document previous to the MPs. Secondly, according to UNITA statement, because the ruling party MPs do not allow, I would say blocked the intervention of the leader of the parliamentary group of UNITA to explain the demand. So the president of National Assembly wants to make a votation with an open hand out. But UNITA rejected because UNITA said that the votation must be a secret vote. So it was a very turbulent and noisy sessions, and UNITA MPs walked out of the sessions. But anyway, there was a votations only with the MP of MPLA, and the proposal was rejected. UNITA parliamentary members walked out of the parliament saying dictatorship. So it was a very turbulent.
Mario, so, I want to ask you, why did UNITA, first of all, want to impeach President Lourenço?
Yes, UNITA says in a document with around 100 pages that there was a frequent violations of the constitutions by the president, violations of the rule of law and the democratic states, violations of the budget proceedings and the market economic, among other violations according to UNITA.
What happened next now?
So this process for the ruling party, which is a majority at the National Assembly, this intention of impeachment process is now closed. But anyway, it was a political gain for UNITA. So what's next? Monday, President Lourenço will deliver his speech of the State of the Nations at the inaugural sessions of the National Assembly. So there are some expectations if the President João Lourenço will be able to approach this destitution process, this impeachment process. There is also expectations concerning the demands to reform the constitutions. And last but not least, the economic and social situations is worsening.
Mario, thank you so much again. A pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, James.
That was Mario Pavai, a veteran independent Angolan journalist, speaking with us from the capital, Luanda. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called on government, the private sector, civil society, and academia to work together and prioritize feeding the hungry. This, as the UN says 780 million people globally are going hungry and 50 million children are at risk of death from severe hunger. In his World Food Day statement today, Monday, the Secretary General called for scaling up investments to increase resilience in agriculture and addressing long-term causes of hunger, such as conflict and climate change.
World Food Day 2023 comes during a global food crisis, with the world moving backwards on ending hunger and malnutrition. Some 780 million people around the world are going hungry. Almost 50 million children are at risk of death from severe wasting. Yet, funding for this year's global humanitarian appeal stands at just 32%. In our world of plenty, it is outrageous that a person dies of hunger every few seconds, while the World Food Programme has been forced to cut its essential aid programs. In 2015, after years of progress, governments set the goal of zero hunger by 2030. But 8 years later, the number of people suffering from hunger has increased significantly. This crisis demands action, first and foremost from national governments, which have a responsibility to make sure their people have enough to eat. But many governments lack the resources to do so, and so effective international solidarity is also essential. The long-term causes of the global food crisis include conflicts, climate extremes, inequality, and economic instability. The UN system is addressing these root causes through our support for sustainable, equitable food systems that put people over profits. That means massively scaling up investments in resilient agriculture and aligning them with climate action. It means leveraging science and technology to improve the efficiency and reach of food systems. This year's theme for World Food Day focuses on water, a necessity for nutritious and healthy food. Sustainable management of water for agriculture and food production is essential to end hunger, achieve the SDGs, and preserve water for future generations. Zero hunger is achievable. This World Food Day, I call on governments, the private sector, civil society, and academia to work together to prioritize feeding the hungry, to bring ending this crisis to the top of the global agenda, and to invest in long-term solutions that provide everyone with enough to eat.
That was UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres with his World Food Day message today, Monday, October 16. Defending champion South Africa edged host France 29-28 in a thrilling 7-try encounter on Sunday to reach next weekend's Rugby World Cup semifinals. The Springboks kept their hopes of a record 4th title alive thanks to flying half-hundred pullets, second-half points, setting up a last four meeting with England back in Paris on Saturday. France were knocked out at the quarterfinal stage despite leading at the break in a huge disappointment for the expecting home support at the Stade de France. And that's it for this Monday, October 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, which you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.